stand by. Good day, everyone, and welcome, and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, Green to GUI, the Perfect Mix of ISPS and Eclipse. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, you'll learn about the ISPS productivity tool and how to blend its core functionality with the features of WebSphere Developer on System Z. The speaker for today's teleconference are Pamela Barron, Business Unit Executive, Z-Series SW80 Tools Americas, Dan Brown, Z-Series Certified Sales Enablement Specialist, 80 Tools, and Timothy McGee, Field Technical Sales Specialist, System Z, PD Tools, and Application Development for ZOS. At this time, I'd like to hand it over to our first speaker, Pamela Barron.
Thank you, and thank everyone for joining today's call. I'd like to introduce the other speakers. First, after myself, will be Dan Brown, 80 Tools from Americas, and then Tim McGee, our Problem Determination Tools Technical Specialist in the Americas. Go to Chart 2, our agenda. I'm going to have a brief introduction to this session and the topics we'll be covering. Then we'll go into two types of tools, our ISPS productivity tool, and some screenshots as a functional walkthrough, and our WDZ, or WebSphere Developer for System Z. Again, some screenshots. Have just a couple polling questions, and then open the call up for some question and answers. Chart 3, Green to GUI. Many of you are asking, that's kind of a strange name, but let's think about what we're talking about. The green screen, our ISP of productivity. So how can we have more productivity with the green screen? All of you out there have been probably doing this for 20 or 30 years, and you are experts. You've mastered the technical way of doing this. So as people retire in COBOL, or perhaps staff shortages occur and you don't hire more people, but yet you have to be more productive, how can you possibly do that when you've mastered the green screen? Well, we have a tool called ISPS Productivity Tool. On the bottom left of the screen, you see the screenshot and the tool. And Dan's going to talk about in some detail of how this tool can take 20 to 30 keystrokes typically done in ISPS and condense it down to maybe two or three keystrokes. It also ties to other IBM products and other tools on the market where you can enhance your capability and productivity. On the other side of the coin, as we evolve further with SOA and Eclipse technology of having to do development with Java, COBOL, PL1, and you're developing something in Java, you typically throw it over the fence, and someone in COBOL catches it, and they're trying to figure out where you are, and you throw it back, it becomes disruptive. But if you had a single Eclipse workbench that all the developers were using the same with a point, click, and drop-down screens, you could be more productive. So what we're going to talk about today is both these products and what's the perfect mix for you. And it will be different for every company on this call. So as we go through this, please listen to both tools, hear what they can benefit by, and decide what's the perfect mix for you. If you could go to Chart 4, I'd like to turn the call over to Dan Brown.
Thank you, PJ. I will be discussing today the ISPF Productivity Tool Overview, and then followed by a functional walkthrough of the ISPF Productivity Tool to give you a general idea of how the tool works and how much productivity you can gain with this particular tool. Going to slide number 5, on this particular screen, this is a high-level overview of the ISPF Productivity Tool. As mentioned, the tool will consolidate commands within a single panel, as you'll see in a moment. It presents a comprehensive, object-oriented, project-related list of data sets that we refer to as an object list or an O list. In addition, you can reduce keystrokes and EXCP counts, as you'll see as we go through the functional walkthrough. It provides extensive point-and-shoot capabilities. TSO command execution, meaning that we can build a customized command shell for TSO. It does automatic or dynamic compression of PDSs, and it also can dynamically expand directories for PDSs, saving you time when your PDSs fill up and when the directory fills up associated with a PDS. We also provide print and clipboard capabilities and improves overall navigation with ISPF. You'll also notice that we provide support for the various change management systems, including SCLM, Panvalet, and Librarian. And we also provide enhanced patterns for finding data. We've also enhanced product for version 5.9 to add some powerful shortcuts, as you'll see. Going to slide number 6, you'll see that we're going to go through the functional walkthrough. Going on to slide number 7, here you see the primary option menu of ISPF. IPT, as we refer to it, or ISPF Productivity Tool, is seamless in ISPF. You'll notice as we go through the screens, they'll look similar to ISPF with additional functionality. Once we enter, for example, 3.4 in the primary option menu of ISPF and press Enter, going to slide number 8, you'll notice that the screen has changed on the 3.4 screen slightly. Now see an object list area. Here we're identifying a high-level qualifier of DNet 187. This will establish a temporary object list, or O-list as we refer to it. Also, as you can see in the lower left-hand corner of the bullet point, you can list not only qualifiers, but you can list saved object list. You can also list out your link list and save that as an object list, as well as a TSO allocations list of all the data sets that you have in your TSO allocations. Once we enter this in this example, this high-level qualifier, DNet 187, and go to slide number 9, you now can see a temporary list, or what we refer to as a temporary O list, which contains all the data sets that meet that high-level criteria. Now, on this particular screen, to access any given library or PDF here, as it were, we simply have to enter the number. In addition to that, this list can have not only PDFs, it can contain VSAM files, FLAT files, even files on your hard drive on your desktop. Over to the left, you can see some of the commands we can issue. We can compress PDFs, add directory blocks, find text, find members within PDFs, that sort of thing. In addition, from this list, we can issue global change command as well as a global find. And the advantage here of this particular tool for this screen is to be able to process those commands and process against this concatenated list, as it were. Going on to slide number 10, you'll notice that we're entering the number 43 in the primary command line. This is accessing the ADLAB JCL PDS, so rather than having to key the entire PDS name out, we're simply entering a number. Going to slide number 11, once we do that, you can see we're presented with a member list of that PDS. Again, we just saved keystrokes by entering a number versus having to key in the entire data set or partial data set. Going on to slide number 12, if we want to process a find text command and find something within one of these libraries, we enter the find text or FT command on the primary command line, followed by the text that we're looking for. In this particular case, we're looking for adlab.load. What the product will do is it'll scan through all the concatenated libraries and identify where that particular text is located. Going on to slide 13, you'll notice that we've located in library 41 the adlab files, and we've identified the member in which that text resides. We now have the option of browsing or editing the member. Going on to slide number 14, we also can search for members within PDSs or PDSEs. Here we're doing a memf command to locate a member ATC-DIM-5, and again, it'll search through all the concatenated libraries looking for that particular member. Going to slide number 15, in this particular instance, we found it in library number 44, which is an adlab.listing library or PDS. And again, it displays the member. Now I can browse or edit that particular member. Notice again, we're entering 44, or the number of the appropriate library on the primary command line. And since it knows the member name, it immediately takes us, in this case, into edit mode on this particular member. Going on to slide number 17, the member selection list, again, it supports concatenations if we process a global find and change command or find text command, as you've seen. We'll also see how we can compress PDSs or expand directory blocks for PDSs as well. So going to slide number 18, here is just a real quick example of if I'm not familiar with the various IPT commands, I can enter A for assist on the primary command line, and it'll display a little pop-up window identifying all the primary commands as well as all the line commands associated with IPT on this member list. Going to slide number 19, this is simply an example of a couple of different ways that I could issue commands on the member selection list. Either a line command of an L or an LMAP command for a load module would display all the pertinent information for that particular load module, as you can see. Going on to slide number 20, as I mentioned earlier, we do also have extensive cut and paste capability or clipboard capability. We support up to 200 clipboards. You can name and number these clipboards for easy access, whether you want to browse or edit the clipboards. And the most important point is these clipboards can be saved between sessions, meaning that I can log off of TSO, come in the next day, log on, and my clipboards will still be available to me. Going on to slide number 21, here's an example of using the clipboard capability of IPT. Here we can see we're doing a cut command to a clipboard called job card, and you'll notice down in this JCL we're actually copying the job card out and placing that job card in this clipboard we're calling job card. Going on to slide number 22, this particular command that you see on the primary command line, cut STA, is indicating we want to see the status of all our clipboards that we currently have within IPT. So going on to slide number 23, this is an example of all the active clipboards we have. At the bottom, you can see we have a number, debug, IEB copy, job card, and the like. At the top of the screen, you can see all the various line commands that we can process, browse, copy, edit, and so forth. Going on to slide number 24, you can see that we're now pasting from the clipboard job card into some JCL, and we're using our standard before and after line command. Going on to slide number 25, you can see the result of that. You now can see that the job card has been pasted into our JCL member. Going on to slide number 26, active from the member selection list or object list, you can sort on column headings in the member selection list. You can sort on titles in the object list. Down at the bottom there, you can see you can edit, browse, and even view data sets from SDSF, and we can interface with File Manager as well as Fault Analyzer. We have point-and-shoot capability with the product for a data set in JC or output listings in SDSF. We also can point-and-shoot member names in source or JCL, as you'll see in a moment. Going on to slide number 27, if you notice, this is an SDSF output screen. You'll notice that we're placing our cursor on a data set, and when we hit enter, in a moment, you'll see that we'll have an option. If it's a PDF, it will go into a member selection list. You'll notice at the top of the screen where the command area is at, you'll see we're entering a BR. So in order to browse a PDF in standard ISPF mode, in the yellow box, you can see the various steps that you would have to go through versus with IPT entering a BR on the primary command line, placing my cursor on the appropriate data set or PDF and pressing enter. Going to slide number 28, you now can see the result of that browse and placing my cursor on that PDF. I'm now in browse mode on that PDF, looking at the various members within that PDF. Going to slide number 29, the extended TSO commands. As you can see, we support up to 999 entries, both permanent and temporary. We can also maintain some history of all the commands that's been entered in the past. We can execute the TSO commands from any panel by a reference number on any TSO screen or ISPF screen. Going to slide number 30, this is a brief example of a TSO command shell. And you'll notice toward the bottom we have a permanent command list. If you look at number 7, you can see that this is a list DS command. If we wanted to execute that command with IPT on any ISPF panel, we could issue TSO space 7, and it would do a list DS or whatever command we may have established at that particular position in the command list. As I mentioned, we can maintain up to 999 of these entries. Going on to slide number 31, if a directory fills up for a PDF, which happens fairly frequently, you can expand the directory with the expdir command, and it'll add directory blocks to your PDF. Here, all we have to do is on the command line, enter expdir, and on the slide number 32, over to the right top of the screen, you can see that the library has been expanded, meaning we've expanded the directory blocks, and by default, we've expanded that by one block. At installation of the IPT product, the tech support can determine how many blocks that they want to expand directories by, indicating that during installation. Going to the next slide, I'm sure everyone is familiar with this message. When a PDF actually fills up and it needs to be compressed, this is typically what you would get, this type of message. Going to slide number 34, if a PDF does fill up, say you're getting ready to save a member and it's filled up, you can enter the compress command on the primary command line. And then going to slide number 35, again, we'll issue a short message saying that the library has been compressed. And for those of you that had to compress a PDF in the past, you know that it requires many steps to do that versus entering a command on the primary command line. Going on to slide number 36, we've added a couple of new commands in version 5.9. This is one of them, IPT question mark. Many of our customers ask us to provide better tutorials in terms of shortcuts for commands and all the commands available. So if you enter IPT question mark, go on to slide number 37, you can see the types of screens that we display. We'll display the shortcut commands available to you for IPT. Again, I'm just really covering just a real high-level overview of the tool. You can see that there's many commands that can be issued. Going on to slide number 38, this is a shortcut example of the history list. By entering the command OLH, as you can see from any ISPF panel, it'll display the last 100 data sets that you've accessed. And in addition, if that happens to be a PDS, it'll remember the actual member that you accessed. Going on to slide number 39, once you enter the OLH command to look at up to the 100 data sets that you've accessed, you'll notice that it establishes a temporary O list or object list. You now can save this off as a permanent O list. You can also process a global change, find text, global find command, etc., against these particular libraries and members. Going on to slide number 40. In summary, the ISPF productivity tool provides an enhanced action bar, pop-up windows, new functions, as you can see, the point-and-shoot capability. It truly is seamless in ISPF, provides shortcuts and additional commands to reduce the need to navigate the utility panels and go through a number of steps to do simple functions like compress PDSs or expand directory blocks. We saw how it enhanced the ISPF functions and the TSO command shell. It can access frequently used data sets, as we saw earlier with the OLH command, and reduce navigation to individual data sets. And then it improves overall performance of ISPF, reducing CPU usage, EXCP counts, and the like. And then I have the ability to shortcut into browsing and editing or copying data. Now I'd like to turn it over to my colleague, Tim McGee, to review the WDZ product. Tim?
Thank you, Dan. Thank you. It was very good. As Dan just covered, what he showed you was the extension and the new capabilities we're adding to ISPF traditional green screen development. Kind of the next section we want to move into is what our long-term and futuristic plans for ZOS application development interfaces and environments will be. And for that, we're going to talk about our WebSphere developer for System Z. Hopefully everybody is on slide 41 at this time. You can see that what we're going to first of all discuss is the WDZ overview. Then we're going to have a functional walkthrough of the product, a screenshot similar to what Dan did, looking at the basic function of the tool. So let's go to slide 42. And what it's saying is that this is IBM's long-term vision of ZOS. WebSphere developed for System Z is built to speed the efficiencies of the traditional mainframe environment development while enabling that development to integrate into new desktop development applications where you suddenly find ourselves developing composite applications into the future. Web browser front ends, it might be talking to our CICS backend regions. This is the integrated environment for that. In addition, basically, it will enable you to just take your present process that you're presently doing for development on ZOS and enhance that. It, first of all, is an integrated collection of a number of workstation tools to accomplish this, and we're going to get a walkthrough of screenshots similar to Dan to see how this might be done. And it specifically will enable you for development and maintenance, new development. And if we look at the present ZOS environment of edit, submit, debug, maintain data, modify data, we're going to look specifically at what it does in today's present environment in our traditional application maintenance environment. Next, if we transition to slide 43, what we're looking at is a fairly busy slide because this slide is giving us all the functionality that is included in this thing we're going to talk about, WebSphere Developer for Z-Series. As you can see, this is a composite of a number of integrated applications that do quite a bit of function. Many of the functions you notice are even dedicated specifically for development on desktop applications, web page creation, Java applet developments for PCs. But what we're going to focus on is in the upper right-hand corner where the blue arrow is pointing, the things of this package that will enable our present ZOS application development and maintenance. In particular, the ability to work with traditional COBOL, PL1, assembler source applications, interact with the mainframe in terms of enabling or submitting batch jobs or interacting with CICS transactions, interactively debugging, syntax checking, data management. The tool is very focused in providing development of what we call composite applications, applications that have workstation front ends talking to mainframe back ends. It also has a massive function or massive delivery and the capability of enabling your present ZOS application development on the host. Doing your progressional development, as Dan walked you through, and taking that to a new point-and-click enablement capability. Let's all go to slide 44. And on slide 44, what I'm trying to show here is a very simple concept, but it's struggle. I think when I first saw it, I struggled, and that is a different way to look at ZOS development. Traditional ZOS application development and data management is we have an ISPF TSO user ID that we log on to the host, and then we work through this ISPF single interface against LPAR at a time to work with our development environment, look at our JS queue, manage and update our data, whatever. And if you have multiple LPAR access for multiple data and execution environments, you need multiple logons. What WDZ, Webster Developer for System Z, provides is what the picture is showing, is that the traditional interface now becomes a single client. You install a single client on the workstation, and I'll demo in a minute, this single workstation connects to many backends, many ZOS CPUs and or LPARs, and gives you the capability of working across multiple backend execution environments in copying, editing data, submitting jobs, interactively debugging jobs. Really, your workstation becomes a development client where the focus of your real development activity is, and the Z environment becomes just a backend server for data and program execution. Hopefully we'll see this when I go through the screenshots. But this is really a major change in the paradigm of how you interface with the mainframe at this time with ZOS. So hopefully, like I say, this will come clear. I've continually made mention in this discussion thus far about WebSphere Developer for Z. If we go to slide 45, you'll get your first view of what this thing is. It is a workstation client, a software package that gets installed on the desktop that has connectivity to the back end, and we're going to look at the functionality of it. Very, very busy screen we're looking at here and all the activity. I think Dan once said it gives you the ability to emulate a messy desk graphically. But what we're really looking at, though, and we'll go through the details of it, is this ability to have multiple connectivity, multiple activities, just as you do your workstation desktop, where you might have multiple 3270 emulations and multiple versions of a word processor up. All that activity is going to be present, all connecting to your mainframe, your ZOS backend. Let's go to slide 46. And what we're going to do now is walk through a series, just as Dan did with his section. We're going to walk through a series of screenshots of the WebSphere Developer for Z series, looking at some basic functions you perform today in your day-to-day ZOS application development and maintenance. Very high level, but hopefully it'll give you a feel for the use of this tool and what it's going to give you to open up capabilities for you to do. Slide 47, again, I've got a title slide, and it says, how does this thing connect to the ZOS back end? That's a question I know we wanted to include because a lot of times when I just start showing the tool, how did this thing actually become attached to a mainframe environment to do all these wonderful things? So on slide 48, you notice the screen we showed a minute ago. The tool has been started on the desktop. And to the right, it shows a list of remote systems that have been defined to the tool. These are back-end LPARs. Could be on a single CPU, multiple CPUs. The tool doesn't care, that you can connect to. And notice that we've pointed at one, the demo MVS system, right-clicked, and a menu appears, and it gives us the option of connect. I'm going to select connect, and lo and behold, our traditional RACF top secret with ACF2, it inherits the traditional security systems you presently have on the mainframe. So you're connecting to the mainframe just as you would 3270 emulation when you log into TSO, and it will give you all the capabilities that I'm going to show you in a minute. So your connectivity is through the directional path of your present security system that runs on the mainframe. Once I log on, I find myself connected as on slide 50. And if you notice in the lower left-hand corner of this slide, it shows the properties of the host system that you're connected to, you know, the name of the system, whether you're actively connected or not. And you can get more details on that if you scroll up and down. Slide 51. Now that we're connected to the mainframe with this workstation client, what is it going to do for us that will enable us to do our job? First thing I would like to do is let's look at ZOS file management and file editing, and let's also look at the capability of reading the JES output queue. How does it give us an interface to see what jobs have run and what the status is of those jobs? So on slide 52, we're going to step briefly through a number of screenshots here that hopefully will give us a feel for this. Notice a minute ago, we actually logged on to a system over to the right in the right-hand window titled Remote Systems. We logged on to a system called Demo MVS. Well, now, just like you can with a nice desktop tool. We can point and click and expand. There is a plus sign beside the system. When you expand it, it gives you the option of seeing the JES queue, and even farther down, you can see all your MBS files we can expand and get access to. Let's first of all look at the JES queue. So notice that we've expanded the JES queue there, and he's showing us all the active jobs in the queue that are associated with our ID. I selected one here, the DNET603W job that is run, and notice I can expand it. It'll show me all the held output, much like if you're under the traditional ISPF, SDSF, and you do a question mark. Well, here we've got nice point and click. So I can pick any one of the held outputs. I can point at it, as I'm going to show on slide 53, the next slide. My JES messages, which we always go to when we have problems to determine return codes and what step we might have had problems on. I select that, double-click it, and lo and behold, JES messages appears in a nice scrollable window right in the middle of the WDZ tool. With a nice, if you notice the tab, gives me the actual JES messages title. I can full screen this, scroll up and down, search it using traditional point-and-click techniques. I have this capability with any of the held output. I could also purge it right from the desktop also. So, nice message, point and click, access to the actual JES queue, the output queue here. Let's go to slide 54. On slide 54, as I said a minute ago, I could expand the files. Below, if you notice, there was a thing on MBS files. So I went ahead and expanded the list of MBS files on this slide. And he shows me all the PDSs. And under the, I can expand any PDS, and he shows me all the members. And notice he's even showing me the member type in this one. If you look at the right, I'm talking about the remote systems window. So there's a member there called atcdemo.jcl. This is a ZOS. Keep in mind, we're looking at what exists on the ZOS platform, nice point-and-click capability. I point at this JCL member, double-click, and lo and behold, I'm opening the member in a nice graphic point-and-click format in the middle, just as I did my JES queue. As a matter of fact, we'll come back to this later, but if you look at the top, the tab shows that the JES queue is still there. It's just behind the edit. I have multiple things open at the same time, and it's just a matter of I can point and click at either one. But now I find myself in an edit mode against the mainframe JCL member. And a couple of the big thing to notice here is the colorization. That's because when you edit using this tool, you're actually in the LPEX parsing editor. The editor logically looks at whatever file type you're editing, JCL, COBOL, PL1, even assembler, and he will parse and syntactically syntax check as you type in, you know, your logic within the JCL. What we think of in today in the traditional world is of JCL checkers, where you actually write JCL and submit a job, and it parses, reads the JCL, gives you an output report. This works interactively as I step through the JCL, and the same with COBOL. As an example, if you go to slide 54, you'll notice in this case I typed in an invalid disposition value on the StepLab statement, and immediately the tool comes back and tells me incorrect disposition status. He identifies the error right away as you type. So it's not a matter of writing and then running a job to determine what was an error. The tool interactively checks as you go through. Very powerful feature. Parsing editing. Okay. Now, I'm going to do something else that's really, this is a moment to stop. This is one of the great paradigms or the great opportunities of working with a development environment that's a client connected to multiple mainframes. I'm going to copy a member. If you notice that JCL list, if we all go to slide 56, the list of JCL, there's a member there that I'm going to point at. I'm going to right-click, and he's going to give me the option to do a copy on that member. So I'm going to select copy. Now, hence, that member, just as you think of as things getting copied to the clipboard and pasted, the member has been captured. I've done a copy. Now, going to slide 57, I can go to a different system. Notice, if you look at the right, and this isn't demo MBS. This is SCL LABF2 system that I'm logged onto. I can point to a PDS on this system, a totally different CPU in a different environment in a different world, point at a PDS, right-click, and I have the option of paste. When I select paste, let's all look at slide 58, lo and behold, the member was copied and pasted in and placed in that PDS, that JCL PDS. Now, if we stop and think of what just happened, we just basically did a point-and-click accomplishment of what would have taken an XMIT and a receive and maybe a format and blocking and record formatting and whatever, all done in a simple point and click. Because, as I said, you have a single workstation client connected to any number of back-end ZOS environments, and to us they're just data servers that we can move data cleanly about right from the work development environment. Again, the capability of having a development environment that is a client. We all go to slide 59. Now that we've been working with our JCL, what we want to do is actually interact. We'd like to submit the job. We'd actually like to submit and interactively debug our JCL, the programs associated with this batch job. So I'm going to go up to the window pull down, and I'm going to select the debug perspective. The perspective in the names of this tool is basically the option of debugging without, I want to make a note when we go there. You don't lose what you're presently doing. So notice I select Windows, open perspective, and select the debug option. And he takes me to a different window. Now, it's worth noting, now we're ready for the debugger to invoke, but notice that we're still capable of editing. See, in the notice in the middle of the screen, we still have the JCL present in edit mode, and he will show me the IP address of the workstation. The IP address of the workstation is relevant for our back-end debugger, debug tool, IBM debug tool, which this tool integrates into. When we invoke this batch JCL passing, if you notice in the actual JCL, there's a parm statement. The parm statement has a parameter test, slash test, which is telling the ZOS backend operating system to invoke debug tool. That's all you have to do. Hence, when I put the IP address of the workstation, which is being shown in a pop-up window by the tool, put that in that test parameter and submit this job, as we're going to see on slide 61. I right-click on the JCL, select the submit option. Lo and behold, the JCL is submitted on the ZOS backend platform, the batch job is. It reaches this particular step where the test parameter is, and we find ourselves in debug mode. Now, at this moment, I want to stress the job was submitted and is executing right out of the JES initiator on the ZOS platform. The debug interface is what's being presented under the control of WebSphere Developer for Z, WDZ. So we find ourselves interactively debugging that particular step and that particular batch job. The job is running directly in the JES initiator, and when we're through, we could even go to the whole queue, as we did a minute ago, and look at the held output. Going through the functionality of our debugger is a day class, but just to give you the basic simplicity of it, one of the things people love about this particular interface is that if you go through a traditional 3270 debug, it tends to be all very proprietary, very command-driven. This is an interface we find most customers can sit down, use a few hours, and find a very high level of productivity and comfort with. I'm going to show just the basic element. I've basically stopped at the entry level of the program, so I'd like to identify a location in the program and run to that. So I'm going to point at the source. When I point and right-click at the source, he gives me a pop-up saying, what do you want to find? What location or text string do you want to find? I want to find a text string, which is a variable that I'm interested in, record day dash one here. I say OK. He takes me to the statement where that variable exists, as you see. I can point at that statement and right-click, and he gives me the option of running and stopping at this location. If you notice, pop-up menus, I select run to location. Lo and behold, I run and I stop on statement 269 here, where the variable was. I can lay my cursor over the variable, and lo and behold, look, he gives me a nice pop-up. Interactively, I don't even have to click for this one. This is what we call our hover function, where I can move the cursor about. If you hold it over any one particular variable, he will automatically give you a pop-up of the value. And keep in mind, the job is still running right out of the JES queue on the mainframe. This is our interactive debug integration into WebSphere Developer for ZSER. On slide 66, I think one thing people are often ask at this point when I've shown them the tool is they say, that's fine for batch jobs. What do you do when we have online CICS transactions that we have to invoke from a 3270 green screen? Do we have to go log on to a separate emulator? What we've done to enable 3270 access when required with the tools, if you go to slide 67, is I can point at any one of my connections to the host. I can right-click, and he gives me the option, if you notice highlighted here, called Host Connection Emulator Support. I select that, and you get 3270 emulation, but the emulator comes up just as an edit session would for the JCL we did a minute ago. We've integrated an emulator just as any other edit session right under the tool. At this point, I could full screen log on, go to my CICS region, enter my transaction, kick off a debug, which would come back to the workstation and get back into my debug mode, all right under the control of WDZ. The emulator is built right within the tool and is treated as just another edit session, just as it was a minute ago when we looked at the JES output or the edit of the JCL. Slide 69, two very exciting things are happening with this tool. We not only, as I just showed you, have it integrated into our back-end ZOS debugger, but our future plans with the product, which are coming out in our next coming release, will integrate it fully with our back-end file manager. Our file manager is our ZOS file maintenance tool. This is a tool that gives you the capability You very likely have a tool like this in your shop today that gives you the capability of editing and browsing VSAM, QSAM tables. And you can not only browse and edit them, but you can apply program logic, COBOL copybooks, or PL1 include files, and actually see the data mapped and displayed just as the program would. We have actually taken that traditional green screen tool that a lot of you all are presently using, and we're adding graphical front-end capability with it under the control of WDZ. Ours is directly connected to our IBM File Manager tool, and I'll show you how we've done this. On slide 70, notice that I have a list of files we were looking at a minute ago. I've selected one of them, which is actually a VSAM data set, and I'm going to right-click, and I just want to show you how we can map this particular VSAM data set to a copybook. We all know we do that today in the ISPF world when we're looking at VSAM or QSAM data, and we want to view it mapped as a program copybook or a PL1 include file. So I can right-click on it. It will show me properties, which I select. And properties gives me a pop-up window as shown on slide 71. In here, very simply, I can point to a ZOS mainframe copybook. And it could be multiple copybooks, as in the case of a template, this is a capability of our file manager. But for the sake of our discussion here, let's just call it a copybook. I point to this particular copybook, and I say OK. And on slide 72, lo and behold, our edit session opens, just as it did with JCL, but now notice that the edit session is mapped with the copybook header information across the top, and all the fields in this VSAM file are organized according to the definition of the copybook, which you would normally see in ISPF. Now, I'm going to full screen this. We'll do that in slide 73. We go to slide 73. I've just done a full screen of that particular edit session. And hence, now notice we have the capability of doing what we call a table view of our data at the top. Notice the copybook definitions are across the top. And you have nice point and click, drag and drop. I can expand any one of those or compress any one of them. And it's showing us all the fields. And I'm just going to raise a big flag I love about this feature. We're no longer restricted to 80 columns now. I can change my font and view as much data. Very, very large, complex files are now viewable and manageable. The other thing, very magic, that's happening here is in the mainframe world, we either have to make a decision. We can view data in a table format as shown at the top, or I can view data one record at a time. By exploiting the capabilities of our point-and-click graphic environment on WDZ, notice I have them both at the same time. At the bottom, I've got a highlighted record, and at the top, I have table formatted. And as I step through my data, I highlight each record highlighted. You notice it'll display it in single mode at the bottom, so I have the capability of both. I could also even remove the formatting by there's a bottom tab called character that I could select that would show the data in its raw format at any time, all with a single point and click. Once again, gives you a larger view of the data, more functional view in the sense that you're doing things that are either or on this ISPF world all in one screen. Really, really a lot of excitement about this function that's scheduled in the next release of the product. On slide 74, the other thing I think that's very impressive is once you view data, mapped, you've defined your data to be mapped to a copybook. If I should select a find and replace, just a traditional find on the data as you would any other data file, JCL, whatever, because the data is mapped, notice that on slide 75, he's showing that he actually shows all the mapped fields, all the copybook fields, and I can actually select particular fields that I want to find, select all, deselect when I do my finds and changes. Very, very powerful feature again, and it's just something you don't have to actually go out and do. It's actually built right within the integration of WDZ and its connection to IBM's file manager on the back end. A very long-term vision on a different way to view and manage ZOS data to really get a lot more functionality rather than the traditional 80 columns, you know, 20 rows. Let's go to slide 76. And again, the other tool we have on our back end, on our ZOS platform, that we've actually got a long-term plan to integrate, or we're integrating the WebSphere developer for Z-Series into, is our IBM Fault Analyzer. The IBM Fault Analyzer is our fault analysis tool. This is a traditional tool. You very likely have one in your shop. When an abend occurs, a traditional ZOS abend, rather than having to go off and take a two-day class on how to read an abend and learn about hexadecimal and offsets and whatever, magic tools that can capture that abend at occurrence and translate it into a report that becomes readable. We've accomplished that with the traditional 3270 interface, but we've also, as part of our next release of WDZ, we're going to be incorporating this new interface capabilities to view ZOS faults in a formatted point-and-click method, and I'll show you what that is. Let's look at slide 77. Again, we were in file manager, and I'm not going to exit my file editing. I'm going to keep that active, but I'm going to go up to the window, and I'm going to say, let's go to a new perspective, and I'm going to select FA perspective as highlighted in this screen, and that's called the fault analyzer perspective. I'm going to say OK, and on slide 78, he's showing us what occurred as we open this screen up, and notice below, there's two sections. On below is a list of all system faults that you can scroll through and search. The faults can be organized by user ID, much like your host, transaction or job name, date and time of the fault, whether it's a duplicate system that's fault occurred on, all of this activity. I can search this, and in any one fault, I can point, double-click, and notice above the list below at the top part, it will give me a detailed report associated with that fault. A nice report telling me that, like we said, a reformat telling me specifically what program failed, where it failed. It'll even, if you scroll down, show you the actual program source code within the static report under what we call the synopsis. But what's nice is if you notice above the fault summary, it tells you that the program that failed, in this case ATCDEM5, failed at source code line number 61. So if I select that line, double-click on it, it will open the source and highlight the failing statement. And in opening the source, I'm in a traditional WebSphere Developer for Z edit session. So now I can actually correct problems here, cut and paste those other that are over source files, whatever. Also notice in the lower left-hand corner, as I'm viewing the source, and this is traditional in JCL in program logic, he gives me what we call an outline. An outline is a structure. He gives me a structure of the actual source program that I'm editing, and I can navigate it. In this case, I could point at any one of those sections or any one of the paragraphs, and he will take me directly to that in the actual source navigation. But, again, the main message here, a nice workstation, the WDZ is integrated into our traditional 3270, Dan was talking about our 3270 technology, how that will move forward into the future. We see this as this client concept. The last slide I wanted to show was on slide 80, and this is just a slide to get kind of, once again, to really stress how much activity or all the activity that's happening here. Notice that what was happening a minute ago, we've reformatted it to show that we have our fault analyzer output active. At the same time, we still have our edit session up that we can come over and modify. Notice down below, as the arrow is pointing to, the debug interactive session is still active, and we can come over and even open other files. So as you have this client concept, multiple activities active at the same time, point-click across multiple ZOS systems, a brave new world out there that we really open up the door, not just in system programming, but for application developers. I'd like to take a minute here and pass it back to the operator to handle questions at this time. Thank you.
And thank you to our speakers. Now we would like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a live Q&A session with the presenters. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. Our first question, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. Or if it was low, press star 3. Please stand by while we allow everyone a chance to signal. And our second question, was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference? If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. Or if it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. Once again, we'll pause just a moment to allow everyone a chance to respond. And our third question, do you have a requirement to make your current SystemZ application development area more productive? If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. Fourth question for today. From what you heard today, would you like more information on ISPF productivity tool? If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. We'll pause for just a moment. Final question for today. From what you heard today, would you like more information on WDZ? If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. And that concludes our survey. Thank you all for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask your question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone at any time. At this time, I will turn the call back over to our speakers while we wait for questions.
A hot topic because you're trying to figure out, do I want to continue with green screens and do I need to start moving to GUI and based on who's on my staff and what are they doing? So we wanted to present both products, give you an idea of what's out there, what IBM's doing, and then figure out what direction you'd like to go. So if you have any questions.
And our first question will come from Greg Steele.
I had a question about the fault analyzer, one of the slides you were showing when you were in the debugging mode and you selected the source code. I wanted to know, let's say you were using a production load library to test a program, how would it know what source code to open and let you edit it since you really couldn't do that to a production source module? Are there ways to point it to different source libraries so that that can happen?
Yes, this is Tim McGee, and in response to that, yes, when I use the word source, I wanted to be very careful. It's actually looking like the other fault tools. It looks at what we call side files. These are files that are generated at compile time, and he's able to extract the source out of that. And I hope I was clear. I'm not. When I was saying you're viewing the source, you're viewing the source of the side file, which hence you can cut and paste using the graphics over to a compilable source. But yes, we have multiple ways you can point to it. One of the advantages of our back-end fault tool, as a matter of fact, is the ease of use. If the source wasn't there at the time of the ab-end, you can always come back and apply it after the fact very easily. We just with a point-and-click capability.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
And again, that is star 1 for questions. Our next question will come from Rafael Lima.
For the WebSphere tool, I'd just like to know, for curiosity, when you... you didn't show anything about USS files, but when you interact with these files, do we have the same problem that we like actually using the terminal 3270 for character code? I mean, you will be using the ASCII code or not? If I need to write, like, for example, a batch Java job, Java program, and so how does work?
Well, I'm not real. I think it's what I heard was the question of code. You know, whether you're working in an EBCDIC or ASCII mode, and it's you're doing, let's say, Java development. I hope it's clear. Was that the question?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope I was, you know, I wanted to be clear that you have the capability, of course, and I didn't go into it, but you also, as you noticed on the screen, you can go into your USS environment on the host and edit and convert, edit and maintain, submit, whatever. Keep in mind that what we were doing there was just a graphical front end to the actual activity on the back end. So even though you're working in an ASCII machine, the editing and all that is not really, I don't know how to put this, you don't have the translation issues. That's all taken care of by the tool when you're working off of the actual file on the host. If you're talking about a Java applet or servlet that would be running under USS and you're editing it from this tool, you could be editing just what exists right on the ZOS platform.
Okay, thanks.
I hope that was correct. If not, we can follow up with it.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks. Cool.
And we'll hear next from Wendell Lovewell.
Hi. Hello. I was wondering why it's called WebSphere Developer. Does it require WebSphere on the back end?
Now, when you say WebSphere, I think you mean a WebSphere application, a WebSphere server. No, this tool doesn't prereq that. But it is part of a big vision as people go forward, you know, and using web servers, using a web server that would run on a ZOS platform, our WebSphere server. It does very, very, one of the large elements of this tool is the ability to generate from the desktop, generate the servlets and the applets that would run under the WebSphere application server, and it falls under that umbrella of tools. But at the same time, what we were talking about today was more specific traditional ZOS, you know, editing against traditional COBOL and batch jobs and CSS.
Could you speak a little bit more to how it connects to the ZOS system then?
Yeah, yes. This is always, I put a couple of slides in here because this question comes up a lot, and I want to be careful because I always say the wrong term or whatever. But when you connect to the ZOS back end, it is worth saying that the people using it will have to have USS access. They will have to be able, you know, their IDs have to be authorized for USS to create a segment. That's basically what he's doing. He's running under the USS environment for, you know, to remotely mount the files when you do file editing and file maintenance. And the same with the JESQ. Now, it's also, I don't want to go too deep into it. The debugger actually is just using traditional IP socket communication, the same IP communication you use with the 3270 emulator. So he's a very simple connection. But for file editing and management, you would have to have the IDs that you're doing connections with have to have USS shared segment capable.
All right. Thank you very much.
And if I could add to that, this is PJ. Just we don't like to confuse you guys, but what we're doing is we're taking WDZ, WebSphere Developer for Z, System Z, and we've moved it over to the Rational Lab to tie closer to what we're doing there with the Rational branding. And so, you know, we're trying not to be pillars within our own brands, but put tools with the right labs for the right direction. So the WebSphere Developer for System Z is going to be renamed Rational Developer for System Z. And I believe the new version is coming out sometime this month. So, you know, look forward to that. The new release is going to have a lot of extra bells and whistles tied to several other IBM products as a front end. Not a requirement, but just if you go that direction, you'll have some extra advantages.
And our next question will come from Navanethan Paramzi.
Hi. My question regarding the IBM WebSphere Developer, the slide number 43. My question is, here they mentioned about that COBOL, DB2, CACS, PL1. I would like to understand whether we can just go for the conversion from PL1 to Java on JTV by using this WebSphere Developer.
I'm not sure, and I want to apologize. I think my phone might have cut out there, but your question was what we were focusing on, of course, was like you were making reference to we support the application development of COBOL, PL1, and C, and were you saying, was your question about developing Java also?
No, it's like converting or migrating this PL1 to Java and JTE.
Oh, converting PL1 to Java.
Yep.
Oh, okay. There is a very, very elaborate story we have, and it's not part of this, in the area of reuse of ZOS assets.
Okay.
This is the capability of taking traditional COBOL applications and whatever and doing what we call code slice and extracting business logic and then wrapping it where it can be called service. That's really kind of out of, that wasn't in the scope of what we were going to talk about today, but would love to have, if you're interested, we have quite a few follow-ups on that, like to talk about it. And we even have some, I think, some captured presentations. But there is the capability, even the concept of code slicing and reuse of ZOS assets to move into enterprise Java beans and those activities, if that's what you're speaking of.
Okay, thank you.
And ladies and gentlemen, as a final reminder, if you'd like to ask a question or if you do have a follow-up question, please press star 1 at this time. Our next question will come from Rick Chalfant.
Hi, this is Rick. I work in a bank, and we have some rather stringent audit requirements. I was wondering if these products have any kind of logging capabilities that would satisfy those audit requirements.
That speaks more to like the back-end tools we spoke to definitely do in terms of like file editing and keeping an audit trail of activity of who made changes and what dates they made them and tracing changes back to like your problem change tracking. We're getting a lot of information, a lot of requests in the field because of Sarbanes-Oxley, of course. Can you turn a tool on that will create an audit trail that will help us pass audits? And those, we have those definitely in our file manager tool. In our debug tool, there's a lot of interest in a lot of the technology you have there. In particular, we have a coverage utility you can turn on that will keep a trace of all testing you might have had done, date and time it was done, and, you know, success level, those kind of things. So those activities are there. They exist probably, although WDZ, as I showed it, was a graphical front end to these back end tools where the majority of the meat of that activity exists. And that's in our file manager, our debug tool, and our fault tool.
And also, this is Dan. Also, ISPF productivity tool does somewhat indirectly in that it will maintain the last 100 data sets that a user has accessed. I know that's not perhaps what you're asking, but it will capture what a user has accessed in terms of the last 100 data sets.
Thank you.
And it appears there are no further questions at this time. I will turn the conference back over to our speakers for any additional or closing comments.
Hey, thank you very much. Lots of great questions. We really appreciate the interaction. We've had quite a bit of interest in both these products, the ISPF Productivity Tool and WDZ, soon to be Rational Developer for Z, RDZ. And we had a roadshow with our problem determination tools and our TIX tools, and both of these products, we had a lot of follow-up to do with customers as far as looking at them. As I said in the beginning of the call, many customers are looking at their COBOL resources and saying, well, we've got to get faster, better, quicker, find people, and if you can have tooling out there that makes those that you have more productive, even with their expertise of 20, 30 years of knowledge, there are things out there that can help. So we're here for you, and hopefully you've answered the polling questions. If for some reason you have a further-on question or perhaps didn't answer to the polling questions and do want to know more about these products, I'm going to give you my email address. It is pbaron@us.ibm.com. Please feel free to send me an email and just put in the title line, Green to GUI, and I'll make sure I look at that and get someone from our technical side to follow up with you. Thank you very much for attending today.
That does conclude today's teleconference. Thank you for your participation and have a wonderful day.